Before we get started with today's show, I want to tell you about another great ESPN podcast, The Mina Kimes Show, featuring Lenny. Mina talks all things football with her unique brand of humor and insight. Her friends join each episode to talk about the NFL's latest storylines, along with her football-loving dog, Lenny, making frequent contributions. This week, Mina reacts to the Sam Darnold trade and then talks to Spencer Hall about the best wide receivers, running backs, and quarterbacks in the NFL draft. Follow The Mina Kimes Show, featuring Lenny, as well as The Right Time, wherever you get your podcasts. Also, we're celebrating the third birthday of ESPN Plus. That's right. It's been 3 years of bringing you three-pointers, hat tricks, 30 for 30s, and so much more. Celebrate with us today by streaming your favorite live sports, originals, and documentaries on ESPN Plus. Thanks for joining us the past 3 years. And if you don't have ESPN Plus, it's not too late to join the party. Sign up now at ESPNplus.com. The Right Time is brought to you by Goodyear, helping you discover the road ahead. Goodyear, more driven. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe that you are a hater. Today is Foxworth Friday. But before we get into that, I want to tell you, first thing, we are going to have our first episode of The Right Time with a live audience. That's right. We're in the middle of the pandemic. Do it from my apartment. But still all good. It's going to be me and Dominique Thursday, April 22nd at 8 p.m. Eastern. All right. Now, if you want to register, because space is going to be limited for this, go ahead and join us for free on Zoom. Go to bit.ly/therighttime422. All in lowercase letters. bit.ly/therighttime422. 422. I imagine that'll be in the show notes. You can go ahead and check that out. You get your spot. You can put in your questions. Also, leave us a voicemail. We want to know why it is that you quit football. If we're going to do a live show, we got to go to the oldie but goodie. So we're going to have that one. So it's the first virtual live podcast. Me and Dominique Foxworth. It's going to be on a Thursday. It'll still feel like Foxworth Friday. April 22nd, 8 p.m. Eastern. Register at bit.ly/therighttime422. All lowercase. Also, congratulations to Will Radke. Will won our bracket challenge for 2021. As the winner, he gets a free copy of the book that we're using for the Right Time Book Club, Caine Mutiny by Bruce Feldman, and he gets an exclusive spot on the live show. Now, for the book club, Monday is when we're going to bring it back. Monday's the first day of the book club. Monday, April the 12th. Once again, the book is Caine Mutiny by Bruce Feldman, How Miami Overturned the College Football Establishment. Be sure to read up to page 68 or chapter 4 for Monday's episode with Spencer Hall. And when you talk about it, use the hashtag The Right Time Book Club so we can keep talking about it. And now that we got all that out the way, Dominique Foxworth, what's going on, man?
What up? Happy to be here. Looking forward to the live show. I need to get that book and do some reading, apparently.
It's great. You'll love it. Like when you get in it, like knowing you, you're like, oh, man, this is what's up. As we were getting ready to get this thing started, you were talking to Gabe and Tony about some things. So somebody came and knocked on Gabe's door out of nowhere, right? Gabe went and checked it out. And Dominique asked whether or not it was the police. And Tony's like, why would it be the police? And two Americas just jumped up right there. Why would it be the police? Why wouldn't it be the police?
Yeah, I mean, I knew immediately it wasn't the police because Gabe has a knocker and whoever was doing it used the knocker because I heard it was like a knocker sound, like tick, 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 tick.
Yes.
Like you're using the knocker. And everyone knows police go, yeah, they go with the hammer fists. It's like, it's more of a thump, boop, 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 boop. And they probably also yell police. And I was just telling Tony that like, I've never had like run-ins like that and I never had anything to be concerned about. But for whatever reason, every time I've ever heard someone knock on the door, the first thing that crosses my mind is that a police knock or nah?
Yeah.
And I don't know why. It's just two Americas, I guess.
Well, the pound is when they coming in ready for some action.
Yeah,
but that hand turn at like a 45 degree angle and they hitting it with that the second set of knuckles, the middle set of knuckles, and it's that... They just gonna make sure that you hear it, right? It could be a lot of things under those circumstances, but that pound, they got paperwork in their hand too.
I'm trying to think back. There was a time in high school when we had a party and police got called.
That's the one where you ran away?
Oh, no, that's a different party.
Okay.
I wasn't there when the police got there when we got missing because I brought the element. I brought the element to the party and the element was looking for a problem. I was not looking for that same problem. So I left. But no, this was a different party. And I remember that knock very specifically. Other than that, I don't know. I feel like there's some noise complaints in apartments and stuff like that. But I ain't never really had a real police knock. And I don't want to.
Yo, y'all wound up there talking about people honking a horn. And it sounded like what you were saying. And you tell me if I'm wrong here. It's trying to find that middle ground on the horn.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the horn is so aggressive. I rarely honk. Like, I don't honk. Like, if somebody jumps and cuts me off, like, I get annoyed, but I move on. Or if I have to, like, swerve to avoid somebody, then, like, I've already done the swerve. What's the point in a honk now? I tend to feel like the honk is just, like, a waste of time. Because if you're actually in danger, you ain't got no time to honk. And then you are out of the danger by the time you have some time to honk. But sometimes if somebody's on their phone at the light, or if somebody's drifting in your lane, like, I just want to be like, hey, hey, eyes up, mister. Something like that. But the honk is always like, yo, it kind of feels like it's overkill. I need a baby honk, like a little honk button.
Yeah, like the new technology on the horns, it's harder to like get a gradient on it. You know what I mean? Where you just give a little, like, you know, when somebody like when somebody is not moving on the red light, the light turned green and they still like looking at something and you get just a beep, just like, oh, okay, got it. You know, and then you go. It's harder to do that now with the new technology. Now, this is something I always wonder about the horn. And I don't know how this works for other people, because me and Joel were talking about this. We Houstonians of a certain era, we don't honk the horn. You know why?
Because Texas.
They got a gun. That's why, right? Like, somebody got shot in traffic once for honking a horn, and it was so wild when I heard Joel say it. Joel's like, yeah, man, my parents said don't honk that horn. I was like, oh, I thought it was just us. No, it's everybody. Houston, the horn, no need. No need. You just got to suck it up.
Yeah, that's not why I didn't honk the horn. I never honked the horn. It's just like, I don't know. I'm not looking for confrontation. If I got to honk the horn, it's fine. If you cut me off, like, I move on. My life's pretty good. Even when I was like 16, 17 years old, like, I was happy. Like, you ain't ruined my day. Like, maybe I'm going to be 5 minutes later, but I'm cool. I just keep it moving. I'm pretty chill. But I do remember the gun story reminds me of being in Denver. I think it was my second year in league. No, it was my first year in the league. I went to just hanging out, whatever, go back to some woman's apartment with some teammates, and actually one of our assistant coaches. That's a whole nother story. But anyway, we go there, and then one of the young ladies called her boyfriend. So it's like 10 women there, and one of them called her boyfriend to come pick her up. And her boyfriend like blocks our car in, and it was like, hey, watch out. I was like, nobody's even talking to your girl. Like, no one cares. And then he moves his car. And I just said to him, like, man, you can't really do that to people. You don't really know what people got. And he pointed to the back of his pickup truck that had a rifle rack on it. He was like, I got what I need. And I was like, all right, yeah, I don't need to be here. I don't want to be here. I don't care about none of y'all. And I'm never putting myself in this situation again, because who the hell knows?
Every day, Vernon Maxwell, we talked to him about the horn honking. In Houston. By the way, do you honk anything but a horn?
Yeah, no.
Yeah, like that's the only thing that gets honked.
That's fair. It's a very narrow verb.
I thought about that.
Yeah, it never crossed my mind before.
I have heard people refer to a nose as a honker, though.
Yeah.
Like you got a big nose, they say you got a honker.
Yeah, I mean, don't geese honk? I mean, you can't honk a goose.
Yeah,
but geese do honk.
Yeah, there's some child who's probably like, I was trying to honk the goose, mommy.
Geese don't play. You better not go near no goose. They'll fight you.
You play any golf?
Not really. I'm getting to that age. I've always pushed it off. I'm like, nah, if I want to play sports, I'm going to play sports. But not even that age. My body is getting near that point where a basketball game costs me 2 weeks. And I'm going to have to play golf.
Somebody asked me if I had retired playing basketball because of quarantine. And I'm like, which quarantine you talking about? The one from like 10 years ago? I've been done retired playing basketball. Oh, no, 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 no. Like, my body has long ago been out of that. But like, you know, it's Masters week. And I didn't really get into the Masters until I was in my 20s. Like, it was around playing golf. Like, I had times I'd watch the Masters and I would enjoy it. And, you know, we got to be careful what we say about the Masters, boy. You know, that's a whole lot of money involved here and a whole lot of money in other places.
Absolutely.
However, dog, let me tell you some things about the Masters that you may not know. They have like a NORAD server on the grounds. Like, everything they do is the toppest of notch. Every single bit of it. They got the best app in the game. Like, they send their graphics package to the networks. And I don't think they let you put none of your stuff on it, like your logo or anything like that. You don't see that I when CBS is broadcast to the masses, because they run the whole damn thing in every way. And everything they do with it is perfect. Every camera shot is perfect. The course looks perfect. It's always wildly entertaining, no matter what the score is, even if like you're not really into golf. Like, they get everything so right about the Masters that I almost every now and then forget what exactly is going on here.
That is amazing. That is some amazing smoke and mirrors, because you're right. I don't watch a lot of golf, but I do watch some of the Masters, and I find myself like enjoying it and commenting on how beautiful the grass is and like feeling that whole feeling that everyone feels when they watch the Masters. And then at some point along the line, I'm reminded either by a friend or just myself. It's like, oh yeah, the Masters has a whole lot of other stuff that comes along with it.
Yeah, but I got to say, though, I was a little surprised this year. They were actually asking some of the golfers about what's going on in Georgia.
Did they? Well, I hadn't even seen what the golfers were saying about it, and I hadn't seen the Masters respond. They have to at least have some sort of statement, right?
Yeah, well, the Masters, like, you saw that terrible statement that the Braves put out.
Yeah, man.
Fred Ridley, who is the man that runs Augusta National now, he kind of gave the same statement, but was so much better at it. Mm-hmm. Like, they didn't lash out at people behind the boycott, but they're like, yeah, but you know, this will wind up hurting the people of whatever and da, da, da. Like, they're really good at being rich. Like, I always say about like Charles Barkley is better than anybody I've ever met at being rich and famous. Like, he makes everybody feel good about the fact that you get to be around him. He's always so much fun and so warm and everything else. Them folks at Augusta are so good at being filthy, stinking rich. And they have this tournament every year, and they let regular people come in and get a whiff of that rich. They don't charge a lot of money for the stuff once you're there. Everybody seems to have a great time with it. Like, they are just better at being rich than anybody else. But I did not think anybody would even comment on that, because they ain't got to comment on nothing, except those are the titans of industry that are members of Augusta National. And industry is like, yo, man, y'all wilding down here right now. And so they had to figure it out.
Do you think it's just like goodwill? I mean, along with them like being meticulous about their image and statements and those sorts of things, but it's just like goodwill that they have that helps them like avoid situations like this, because it doesn't feel like it's a story. And it was the story for baseball.
Yeah. Well, I think everything about Augusta National is close enough to see, too far to touch.
Right.
Right. Like, they let you get in there a little bit, but hey, don't put your hands on nothing. You know what I mean? But with baseball, I think it was a little different, because they could put that event anywhere.
Yeah.
Augusta National runs the Masters. Like, people are like, I wonder if they're going to move the Masters out. Anybody making them do nothing. The most gangster move ever. I'll never forget this. When Martha Burke, I forget what the name of her organization was, but when they were protesting the fact that Augusta National did not have any female members, and she was going to go work on the sponsors. And Augusta National was like, don't worry, boys, we'll pay for the time this year. Lay low. We'll be back. Don't worry about it. We'll take this hit for everybody. And that's like, oh, okay. Y'all run the game. Now, this year is interesting because they had Lee Elder out there. They show props to Lee Elder, the first black man to play at the Masters. And then they have Jack Nicklaus and Gary Player as the starters. And it's like, don't ask them boys too many questions about nothing at all. Gary Player was out here rocking for apartheid, man.
I mean, yeah, that's unfortunate. It's worse than unfortunate. But when you were saying that, my mind went to Hubert Davis, where it was like, don't ask them about nothing. Like, the same goes for some black people. I think the assumption is that because you are black, you are qualified or interested or capable of like responsibly talking about issues of race. That ain't true. Not that Hubert, I know that to be true or false about Hubert, but don't ever say, I'm proud to be African-American.
Well, hold on. Before you drop the hammer, I feel like this might be a Two Americas moment, because I know that black people are talking about this a lot, but I don't know if white people have gotten around to finding out what Hubert Davis did.
How could you?
Because it all depends on who you follow, right? Like, this is not something that white people find interesting, but black people were like, her? So,
okay.
Hubert Davis.
I thought you were saying that some people could watch that clip.
Oh, no.
And not hit the rewind button.
No.
What did you say?
No, I think some people don't know the clip, right? Because this wasn't so germane to like actual North Carolina basketball. So for those who do not know this, I just want to set it up for the people who ain't aware. Hubert Davis, first black head coach in the history of North Carolina basketball. That's a really big deal, right? And so somebody asked Hubert about being the first black coach in North Carolina, but he was trying to downplay that it was a big deal. And so Hubert got on the microphone and he talked about how he is an African American, which is always like, nah, you're black. And then he went and he said that, you know, he gave some statistics about minority coaches and black coaches in particular and how it's important. But he said that, you know, he was proud to have this job and that. And then he goes, but I am also proud to have a wife who is white. And it was like, whoa. And just so you know, that's exactly how he phrased it. I am proud to have a wife who is white.
Let's be clear, because I listened to it so many times. You left out very. He said, I'm proud to be African-American, but I'm also very proud to have a wife who is white.
Yes. And I think that what he was trying, I think I know what he was trying to say, right? He was trying to say, yeah, I'm a black. He was trying to give a like a big tent message, right? Like, you know, I'm black. My wife is white. My kids, little of both. That's how he put it, not me. Just so you understand this, right? You know, so he was trying to go with it, but it came out, I am proud to have a wife who is white, or is it proud to have a white wife? Either way it went, the needle came off the record, and he just ruined the February moment, right? Like, and especially, I think people need to understand, UNC basketball is a big deal to black people in North Carolina, right? Like, they were ahead of the curve on integration and everything else. Like, black people root for Carolina like people root for, like, the local HBCU. Like, I've never seen the relationship anywhere between black people and the white school like I see with UNC and black folks.
Georgetown.
Yes, that's right. It is a white school. Sorry about that. You there?
I'm in D.C. and black people in D.C. love Georgetown.
Right. But that was because they had a black man in charge who was doing black man things, right? Yeah. Like Dean Smith is the OG of this one. But black people have a real attachment. And so Hubert getting this job matters. And then Hubert went and said that. And everybody was like, what do you mean?
Yeah, my dad's from Charlotte. So I grew up watching ACC tournaments, rooting for all those guys and like wanting to go to UNC. I painted my childhood room, my brother and I shared. We painted it Carolina blue and had the Carolina starter jackets. Like I was really into it. And it's because my dad was from Charlotte and UNC was like the black alternative down there to root for because you wasn't going to be rooting for Duke or any of those other institutions. Yeah. Or NC State. Hell nah. So yeah, I know about the black people's relationship with them.
And then Hubert with it broke our hearts. Hubert just came out there and said that and was like, yo, we was really feeling good about what was going on here. Like being proud of your wife is one thing, right? But he said it like, I'm proud that I married this white woman.
It was like, then why are you taking this job? Because it sounds like you feel like you already done made it. Like you already done reached the pinnacle. You got the golden ticket. You got the jewel that you wanted. So why are you accepting this job? It seems like you are done. Time to retire.
I couldn't believe he said that. And I just couldn't imagine what I would have done if I was in the room. Because, you know, as a white folks that's like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And black people are like, no, no.
Do you think that's what he meant? Or do you think that he just was like, he was just talking off the cuff and was trying to make this big tent message and just did it very inartfully? Or do you think that he was just like saying, yeah, I'm proud that we have some unity or something?
I think he was trying to say that, right? Like he was just trying to be like, I ain't just coaching for the black people. You know what I mean? Like, I think that's what he meant, but that is not what anybody heard. All everybody heard was just, and look, man, it ain't every day that the Duke fans get to come to UNC fans and be like, yo, what's up with your mans? At least not in this context. That does not happen very often at all. And Hubert just, damn, dog. Like, that's, and you know, ain't nobody working in the comms department at UNC understanding what a mistake he just made.
How could they not? You keep blowing my mind with this, suggesting that, okay, so these are people in the comms department who watched this entire press conference. And the lighting was very terrible also, which was shocking to me. Like, were they trying to lean into the dark motif? Like, we got a black coat, so we just not gonna turn the lights up? I can't imagine that anyone could listen to that and not be like, ooh, we got some work to do. So you think that some people in the comms department at USC heard him say that and had to wait for Twitter to tell them that he done messed up?
White people don't always know when they allowed to have an opinion. You know what I'm saying? They don't know, like, and it's tricky because when you start talking about, like, black men dating white women, I don't know how okay they are with that in the first place, right? And so it's possible that they're like, yeah, Hubert, that is what you should be aspiring to. You should be proud. I don't know. I just know that like, if Dean was still here, I feel like Dean would have been like, Hubert, let's talk for a second. I don't think I would have gone about that way if I were you.
I mean, I feel like he just should have said love. I don't think he had to bring his wife into it at all. But like, if you really felt like you needed to, and the love of my life happens to be a white woman. But I don't understand what he's trying to accomplish in that moment. And
this is about us right now.
Right.
This is not about her. This is not about your family. It's only kind of sort of about you.
Who are you talking to, though? Like, in that moment, who does he want to hear? Because it's not the recruits. Like, that's the most important audience for any college head coach. It's not the fans. I guess it is the fans. It's just the general fans. It's like, I'm down with you too, I guess.
Yeah, I wouldn't do that again. Hube, sorry.
Yeah,
I didn't mean to call him a Herb. That wasn't what I was doing. The thing I joked about on Twitter, some people said nobody said this, but this did happen. It is the truth. There was a time when people thought that it was entirely possible that Biggie's I Got a Story to Tell was about Hubert. And something tells me that Hubert's wife is not the woman that was that had a quick plan for what to do when her man walked in and Biggie pretended to be a robber. I believe some details about that woman would have come up in the verse.
Oh, what a great verse, also.
Yes, all time great, right? But like right after the part about the Utah Jazz, he would have been like, she looked like she from Utah. Like, I feel like that Biggie would have thrown that in there if it was about Herbert Davis. Now, we ultimately found out who it was about. And Dominique, would you believe I had people lecturing me where I was like, yo, there were definitely people who thought that this was about Hubert Davis because people took the 6'5 line literally. Hubert Davis was listed as 6'5. And they're like, nah, man, nobody in the culture ever thought that. Dog, everybody was guessing. People absolutely did think that this one was about Hubert. They're like, nope, he laid that to rest right then and there.
I sent out a tweet also where I just started listing things that I was very proud of, including some sugars, the laces on footballs, the tips of magic wands, only the tips though. The stars and some of the stripes on the American flag. Only some of the stripes.
He's never going to live this down. Like, I don't know if he kicks it with anybody that'll let him know that it's never going to get lived down, but he's never going to live this down. I need to ask Sheed what he thinks about that.
Seems like you're going to tell me. Like, we need some elevator music at some point.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to tell you, I can't be telling people I hear. That would be like betraying a confidence, but like telling you, that's a little different. It's a squad.
What was Hubert's biggest moment, like, as a basketball player? What stands out in your mind? How do you remember Hubert Davis as a player?
Well, Hubert was a little ahead of his time, though, because he was a cash money three-point shooter before people really leaned in on the idea. Hubert was on the 91 Final Four team. Hubert was on the Knicks team that went to the Game 7. Everything I'm talking about with Hubert involves other people, though.
I was trying to think of that myself, where I was like, I've always known who he was or who he is, but I don't have any, like, basketball memories from him at UNC or him in the NBA.
Well, hold on. Hit the music, Gabe.
Thank you for your patience. A representative from the right time will be with you shortly. Your current hold time is
15 seconds.
But this was the two Americas moment in front of everybody, right? And he tried to bring the two Americas together, and all it did was just clearly point out, no, it's two different Americas.
Yeah, it's mind-blowing. Hopefully he figures it out, and he can coach well and recruit, and he can be fine. But you're right, this is never going to get lived down. Like, if he is holding, if he's cutting down the nets, I'm going to be firing out joke tweets at that moment. I don't know what it's going to be, but I guarantee I'm going to find it.
I have been interested in the last month and change at people's attempts to suspend disbelief on Deshaun Watson.
Right.
And I've had a lot of people hit me up and be like, oh, man, y'all already decided that dude did it. No, I'm not doing that because that would be irresponsible. It could potentially get me sued. I'm not ever going to come out at this point. However, I did think that we learned that if 20 something people make allegations, like, it's hard to believe that all of them are lying. That is very difficult to do. And then two women put their names and one put her face on it because she did a press conference about it. But two women put their names on their allegations.
I've had the same experience as you where there are people trying to find something. And like, I understand the impulse to do that. But 22 is a big number. And the women coming public, I think, adds a different dynamic to it. And the people who are trying to find ways to defend Deshaun Watson, and I'm with you, like, we don't know these women. We don't know Deshaun Watson, so we don't need to decide guilt or innocence right now. But there are people trying to make the case, and they're pointing to the thing that Rusty Harden brought up, is that they tried to get a settlement, $100,000 settlement out of Deshaun Watson prior to going public, Rusty Harden said about Tony Busby. And that some people are holding up as like, or at least Rusty Harden is holding up as like evidence that this is like some sort of extortion attempt. And that just doesn't add up to me necessarily. I think we all try to assume that everyone's logical, and we try to put ourselves in these shoes and like, would I do that? What would a guilty person do? What would an innocent person do in that moment? I always think that's a mistake, because first of all, people aren't rational. I think as a body, maybe you could say a large population is rational, but individuals aren't rational. And also, you can't put yourself in a situation. You don't know how you will react in that moment. You don't know what you would do. And like the idea that he tried to get a quiet settlement ahead of time, to me, doesn't really make me feel any better about Watson's guilt or innocence. And the last thing is like the idea that the therapist that they kind of brought out to say that Deshaun Watson treated them fine, one of them apparently had a text conversation with Deshaun Watson saying, your name in these streets ain't good, because lots of therapists are talking about you behaving in a not that great way. So it just feels like none of their attempts at clearing this up are helping. They're all hurting.
Yeah, so the NFL's in an interesting place here, because this is why they got that commissioner list, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he gonna be on it. Like, they don't have to do anything right now, because he wasn't gonna be coming to OTAs no matter what. As you may recall, he's kind of got beef, right? Like, he wasn't gonna be doing that, but he will not be playing week one this season. I feel very confident saying that he will not. I don't know how many games he's ultimately going to play this season, but I don't see any way in the world that he's out there for week one. He's gonna be on that list, or he's going to wind up being suspended. I just don't think at this point that there's any way around this. But what's interesting to me about it is, like I've said, we're almost about a year from the George Floyd being killed. And it felt like a moment. Like, there was a moment where everybody's real charged up and everybody cared about this stuff. And now we back here talking about voting rights and having to convince people against the same talking points and everything else, right? Like, our racial reckoning, it happened for a little while, but I can't say that it stayed with people. Part of what's wild to me about Watson and these allegations, if they're true, after 2017, I can't believe that you're rolling the dice on any of this stuff, any of it at all. Like, I can't believe you're simply looking for masseuses on Instagram. That, again, to me, big red flag here. Not Yelp, going on Instagram. That don't seem the place for you to do that. That simply doesn't make any sense if you make that decision that that's what you're going to do. But I have found it interesting that subsequent to this, the way that people are reacting to what they're hearing and still being like, I don't know, it just feel like a setup to me. This don't feel like no setup no more. Like, it might have felt like a setup at first. This don't feel like no setup now. I saw that woman doing that press conference, man. Did that woman look like she was lying to you? Because she didn't look like she was lying to me.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It goes back to the number of accusations. For me, that makes me feel like it is not some sort of setup. And I mean, no one knows what happened in those rooms other than them and him. And we certainly aren't going to try to figure that out on this podcast. But there is nothing about this situation that makes me feel like he is being like set up or taken advantage of, or they're trying to extort him. Like, it feels as genuine as any other incident would feel when there are 22 people who are willing to put their names as allegation. And your point about Instagram, that's mind-blowing to me. It's like, why you would be on Instagram looking for presumably a sports massage or even a relaxation massage, knowing who you are and having so many like therapists. Is like, maybe you have them in different cities or something, but like flying them out, like all that stuff just doesn't quite add up for me.
Yeah, and I mean, he's pushed against this at every point. He is going to continue to fight this, apparently. What happens when the fight stops, right? Because this doesn't strike me, or, and I think the part that we are talking about enough, what happens if the law like really gets involved? Because they've taken this stuff to the police. What happens if there's a charge?
Yeah, I mean, they opened their investigation. So if there's a charge, then he's absolutely getting suspended. And I think that changes the tenor of all this. If they decide that there is no charge, I think that also changes the tenor of all of this, right? Like, the Houston Police Department have opened investigation and they hold a lot of sway. I think whatever happened, whatever they decide to do, if they decide to bring a charge, then Deshaun Watson is absolutely getting suspended. If they don't, I think people start to go to his side and suspect that the police saw something that was fishy.
Yeah, I think he'll still get suspended, though, if they don't bring a charge. I mean, Ben Roethlisberger got suspended without a charge. You know, now, granted, there was a district attorney who did a press conference where he basically said, oh, I think he did it. I just can't win it in court, which is something that comes up very often on these things and is entirely possible on something as it deals with Watson, that being able to prove it beyond the quote unquote reasonable doubt, especially on this, because people are so invested in not believing that that might be difficult. But again, these are Cosby numbers, man. These are Cosby numbers. And so I don't blame anybody if they don't want to come out and be like, yo, he did that and he needs to be shut down. I don't blame nobody for that. But I cannot roll with anybody that's still on the, I think this is a setup program.
Yeah. I mean, it's clear that we talked about earlier a little bit about how industry has to take a stand on certain things. Like, he's losing endorsements. Nike is out.
That was the big one for me.
Yeah. Beats is out. Rolex is out. I didn't even know he had a Rolex endorsement.
But neither did I.
All out. Yeah. I was reading it this morning. It was like, Rolex was like, we don't want to do nothing with you no more. But yeah, the Nike one is huge.
Yeah. And Nike didn't terminate the relationship. They suspended it. But even still, Nike will ride with you through the ends. But this is not the same as Tiger Woods, right? They roll with Lance Armstrong for as long as they could, in spite of all the evidence in the world that Lance Armstrong was out here lying to us, right? Now, that was a little different because people thought that they were in on the lie. So they were, you know, in a little bit of a different place. Watson, they were like, nah, we going to get ourselves off of this one. That's nothing to give you cause for optimism. I didn't think it was cause for optimism either, when the best that Rusty Harden could come up with was that list of character letters from all the masseuses that Deshaun Watson did not behave sexually inappropriate with. I was like, yo, you got the best lawyer in Houston, which, by the way, is not an easy contest to win. You got the best lawyer in Houston, and this is all he could come up with for you.
That's bad. It's that and them saying that it's an extortion attempt because they tried to get a settlement before they went public. Like, that's pretty much their court of public opinion defense right now. It's like, we got other people who say he didn't sexually assault them. Like, that to me means nothing. like, okay, congratulations. That don't mean that these other women are lying.
Yo, lawyers, one thing about being a lawyer, I guess that's just part of the gig, is that every now and then you got to get up and say something that you absolutely do not believe to be true. Right? Like, that's just kind of what the game is in defending people. Like, I was thinking about that. I don't remember if I talked about it on the podcast, but with that NCAA case. So I forget the guy's name. I think it's Waxman, whoever it is, the lawyer that worked for the NCAA in that case. This man is considered to be one of the top lawyers of the last 40 years. He used to be a solicitor general under Clinton. And he had to go in there trying to carry the NCAA's water. I just can't imagine, like, I'm going before the Supreme Court and I'm bringing this bullshit. While lawyers often have to get up and say things that they don't believe, things that are true, so forth and so on, the cases that get to the Supreme Court are generally, you know, this could go either way, right? Like, that's the whole reason why it's there. This could go either way. Can you imagine being a man with pride and you getting checked by Clarence Thomas, who don't never talk?
That was wild. That was wild.
And you don't have an answer for his question? And that's how Rusty Harden got to be feeling at this point. Like, Deshaun Watson's like, I assure you, I didn't do it. Like, looked him in the eye, banged on the table. And then just keep going. And he's like, damn, because at first they were like, you know, finally, we have a name here, so we will be able to defend ourselves. And we ain't really heard no defense about this. Like, this woman that was out there who got up and gave the press conference, they not acting like she hasn't been wronged.
Yeah, they just brought up the settlement, and I think it was you who brought this to my attention at the very beginning of this. It may not have been you, but anyway, someone brought to my attention that Deshaun Watson's first statement was, I've only treated women with the utmost respect. It just felt like every move that they make is just like, you're not saying the thing that you're supposed to say. You're not doing the thing that you're supposed to do to make it clear that you are not guilty in this of what you're being accused of. Like, no one asked if you treated anybody with the utmost respect. Like, that to me seems like it's tantamount to be like, but these massage therapists said I'm all right. It doesn't hit any of the points that you're being accused of.
And here's how you know the NFL as a not the Park Avenue NFL, but like the broad NFL. Here's how you know they not really believe in his story. Because David Tepper went and got Sam Darnold.
Yeah.
It wasn't that long ago that we were like, you can give 5 first round picks for Deshaun Watson. Now everybody's like, yeah, I could. But now you think about it. Now, granted, it was different money and everything else. But Antonio Brown had all that stuff pending, and the Patriots still brought him in. He still signed him, you know, and he looked kind of dead to rights in that circumstance. But they were like, yeah, we'll see. We'll go ahead and do that. No big deal. Holy, look at that Watson like, nah, dog, I think we're good, man. You'll know it's a real problem when they start putting up Tyrod Taylor billboards in Houston. But they're like, yeah, this dude ain't going, he ain't going to be playing for us this year.
They ain't never putting up no Tyrod Taylor billboards. They're just going to take the Watson ones down.
Right. Right. They're going to be like, so is there any way we could still use J.J. Watt?
Yeah. They're going to put up some David Culley joints or something.
Is it possible? Oh, man. Like David Culley thought he was stepping into something, right? He thought he was stepping into something just because Watson wanted to be traded. So let's try this. Let's say that the league doesn't do anything. They don't put Watson on the list, any of that stuff. They decide for whatever reason that they've looked into it and they don't think it's a big deal. And this dude show up to camp. Good luck, David Culley. Good luck, Deshaun Watson. Good luck with all of this. This is not looking good for you, young man. If he has done what he is alleged to have done from reading through the paperwork, it is obvious that he has a real problem. Saying that is not to absolve him of responsibility for his behavior, but the details in that paperwork are like, yo, something wrong with you, dog. And the fact that all these allegations seem to have taken place after the world shut down. There are a lot of levels to it. And since it was a civil suit, I think that's a big part of it, is that we don't know what to do with civil suits because anybody can file a civil suit. Anybody can come out there and put your name in a civil suit. So as a result, I understand people like with the cops, and not that the cops have earned our total trust, but the cops are going to give us a little bit more information. There's going to be more background. It's going to be a level of trust that we are going to have in the evidence.
Yep. I mean, because the police there is like, it's like an institution, and there is like check marks and or checkpoints, and there's a number of people involved. And again, obviously, law enforcement in general doesn't deserve all of our trust, but somebody we ain't never met, like, is anybody can come out and just say, hey, I'm filing this lawsuit, and you got to show up and defend yourself.
Yeah, I don't know what to do when that happens. Like, me personally, when it is a civil suit, I'm very rarely comfortable coming with it. Like, Derrick Rose is an example on that one. Because, Derrick Rose, there's a lot of people who are just done with Derrick Rose, period, based on what went down with that civil suit. And really, the thing he said in that deposition about we men, you should have known what was going down. There's that one. But he won it in court, and it didn't take long, you know? But that I think that also happened at the time where people were fully in the throes of, like, believe women. They were actually doing it for a little while. And so when that went down, and it's like, women won't make these accusations if it's not true, which is the truth 99.99% of the time. But if you were part of that 0.01, you would want to, like, hey, let's stop and like actually see what's going on here. But it's a civil suit. Again, I don't quite know what to do. Like, the evidentiary standard is different on a civil suit. In criminal court, it's beyond a reasonable doubt. In civil court, it is preponderance of the evidence, 50% plus some epsilon chance that it is higher. And that, to me, is not a comfortable standard for me to say that somebody did or did not do something, you know? Like, and I think that's part of what it is with Watson now, is that. And that's why this part with the law being involved. If the law says charges are coming, he may never play football again.
Yeah. I mean, and especially given the context you gave about Roethlisberger, is how the DA in that situation kind of gave a press conference suggesting we think he did it, but we ain't got enough evidence. Like, I don't know how they don't bring a case at this point. I mean, I don't know. I guess there's a lot of stuff that you can look into and find out, but like 22 women saying the same one person did one thing, like, it feels like that's a lot pushing in the same direction.
That was another thing that was interesting when Rusty Harden was like, we know one of these women is lying. Oh, that's what you got? One? You know that what, like, they're going to try to play the one of them's lying, so they all lying. I'm like, Rusty, that can't be the best that you got. Keep in mind, Rusty is the guy that got Roger Clemens off when he seemed to be obviously lying in front of Congress at a hearing that he called for himself. Congress, I'd love to come lie to y'all. I think he got away with it. I'm not saying he did, but it looked like he got away with it. But perjury's hard to get proof on, just like matters of sexual assault or whatever are hard to get proof on.
Rusty must be saving his stuff for court. That's what he's doing, maybe. I don't know, because this isn't helping anybody right now. It's just looking a mess. I want to go to the dinner that David Culley and Dusty Baker are having.
Yes.
They should have a weekly brunch. Because David Culley got dropped into this hornet's nest. At least Dusty Baker, like, knew the full scope of the hornet's nest that he got dropped into in Houston, taking over that team who has been accused of cheating. And these guys are both just supposed to put a happy face on these foolish organizations.
Well, hold on. No. That's a dinner for three. But Steven Silas over there ordering doubles.
Oh, I forgot about Steven Silas. Yeah, he at the bar. He not even sitting with them.
Look, man, Houston got three teams with three different cleanup jobs, and they did what they always do when it's time to clean up. All three of them called a brother. Steven Silas, man, that press conference he had, where he was just like, damn, man, I just don't know what I'm doing out here. David Culley's like, I ain't never made this much money in my life. Like, you remember what it was like that first time payday came and you looked down and you was like, damn, it ain't never felt like this.
It was signing day because I got a signing bonus. And I was like, oh, it took a minute to, like, understand what it meant. Like, because that's not something that people experience very often. Like, oh, this is different. I'm sure David Culley's still basking in that glow. He don't care.
He got that stub framed, right? Like I'll tell you a true story. I interned at a major company when I was in graduate school, and I worked for 1 week, and I got a check that after tax was $1,000. And I looked at my daddy, and I looked at that check. Like, I could pay my whole rent with this, you know what I'm saying? I looked at my daddy, I looked at that check, and I said, I understand how people sell out now. That was over $1,000. Okay, that was about $1,000.
I'm sure the people who listen to this like have a good feeling about who your daddy is.
Yes,
the idea that you said that to your father is hilarious to me because he comes across to me as somebody who is not much for the selling out.
No, he is not much about the selling out. But let me tell you about the first time he came to my house in Miami.
he had some questions about the decisions he had made, the life choices.
So my daddy loves water, like beach and all of that stuff. And so the place he came to, we were a couple blocks off the beach, but I was on the Intracoastal, right? So I had water right out there. And it's one of the proudest moments of my life, actually, just watching my dad go out on that balcony and just stand there and just look, right? Like he's just looking at it. Like it really made me feel good, you know, that was his, boy, you done made it. Like my daddy does a great job to this day of reminding me that how proud he is. Yeah, I remember, man, I flunked out of grad school. Like, I had some times I didn't think it was going to work out this way. And he told me that. But I remember he was on that balcony. He came back inside. He looked at me and he was like, I may have to change some of my thoughts about the ruling class.
So, I feel like your balcony was like Augusta for him. He was like,
yes. Oh. No, there's no way to ever, like I had, like, these were houses, unless you play ball, you don't know nobody that lived like that, like, in the place that I was in. Like, he comes in, and he's just like, man, he really said it, though. I might have to alter some of my thoughts about the ruling class. And then I think he was proud of me, because I managed to get that place without selling out. You know what I mean? Like, that was his thing. But yeah, my dad, like, that first time you get that big check, like, you just look down, you're like, really? Like, when people are like, man, I can't believe the tax man took everything. There's a level of check where you notice that you'd be like, damn, I didn't think it was going to be that much because the tax man. But then there's that next level, like, yeah, the tax man took a hell of a lot out of this. But do you see what it left me?
That's a great place to be in. Did you see what he left me? It's a great place to be in. Don't be worried about what he took, because look what I still got.
Yeah, I got a bonus check one time, and that was amazing. I just couldn't believe it. I was just like, wow, all at one time for me?
Especially when you ain't counting on it. When you ain't counting on it, there's a difference when you, I think it was, it was a few thousand dollars, but you were doing some sort of like sponsored thing. And whoever was supposed to be doing it with you couldn't make it. And they called me and was like, hey, can you pop up here with Bomani for 30 minutes? I was like, sure. And they sent over the number. And it wasn't, I mean, obviously it wasn't life-changing money, but it was unexpected and it felt fantastic. Yes. It was just one comma, but it was beautiful. And that I could only imagine.
It was a comma, but it had two numbers in the front of the comma.
Ah, man, what a time to be alive.
Yes. Weird flexes all around, but hey, man, we just trying to give you a glimpse into what it's like. You know, we wasn't always up. Sometimes you have a come up, and the moment of the come up is kind of like winning the lottery, even if you worked to get the money. But that is Dominique Foxworth. Check him out all over the network. And of course, every Friday here on Foxworth Fridays on The Right Time. And ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing three times a week. Gabe Bassane and Tony Collada, you'd handle everything behind the scenes. Thank you, guys. Follow The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. And we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.